I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. Florida is a critical swing state in this year's presidential election, and no part of Florida hangs in the balance more than Central Florida. This week on Intersection, the head of the Republican Party of Florida, Lenny Curry, joins me to discuss in what ways the GOP is focused on our region. Also, a new documentary follows a group of wounded Iraq and Afghanistan veterans on a fly fishing trip to Montana. The film is screening this week at the Florida Film Festival. That's ahead on Intersection. Lenny Curry is the chairman of the Florida Republican Party. He joins me from Jacksonville. Good to speak with you, Mr. Curry.
Good to be with you as well. Thanks for having me.
So Florida, of course, always talked about always as a critical swing state, especially in presidential politics. And I wonder, what is your take on why that seems to be in play as we get closer to the 2012 elections when you've got the state so dominated by Republicans in many of the key elected positions? Why is Florida still hanging in the balance in terms of its swing status?
Well, we're actually a very diverse state in terms of socioeconomic background, ethnicity. Florida represents what much of the country represents, so we're a melting pot. That's the good news. We're a melting pot, which is actually what Florida, in my mind, is what the founding fathers envisioned when they started this country, a melting pot where everybody would have opportunity. So with so many people with so many different backgrounds, that makes us a swing state because, you know, there's different issues. People have different issues and different concerns. I do believe, however, though, that this election is going to be all about the economy, job creation, a focus on the things that Governor Scott's been focused on, and Florida is going to, I believe, make a decision based on those issues.
Now, of course, in the last presidential election, Barack Obama ended up taking Florida. What do you think is going to be different this time and maybe push it in favor of the GOP?
Well, I think last presidential election cycle, Republicans had made mistakes in terms of spending. We got caught up. They got elected officials got caught up in the culture of Washington, D.C. But they made a mistake and they admitted it. President Obama came in promising hope and change, job creation, turn the economy around, and that didn't happen. And what people have realized now is Republicans made mistakes. They have corrected those mistakes. This president is committed to an ideology that is not what is good for the country. He doesn't believe in free enterprise and opportunity.
You've got a big event coming up this summer in August in terms of the Republican National Convention being held in Tampa. How do you think Florida Republicans are going to be using the national stage over in Tampa?
Well, I think, first of all, it's going to be great for Florida just being a Floridian because it's going to highlight our state, national media attention. There'll be folks from all over the world attending, so businesses and individuals will get to see on television and through other media sources what a great state we have, and we'll attract them to the state. And then it's good for the Republican brand, for people to see what we stand for and what we believe in, and that is free enterprise and economic opportunity, which is the opposite of what this current Democratic Party stands for.
Is this an opportunity to roll out new ideas, new platforms on the national stage?
It's certainly an opportunity to be talking about what's important to us and on the national stage. And I go back to free enterprise. You know, the Democrats want to see, at some level, the economy controlled by the government, what's produced, what's consumed. We see that in the health care law. And they also are for big government programs. And here's what we know based on history. Free enterprise is better, is lifted more people out of poverty than any of the programs that the Democratic Party supports. So that's an opportunity for us to communicate that on a national stage.
Let me ask you about the role that Florida Tea Party is playing in Florida politics. Of course, Governor Rick Scott rode a big surge of Tea Party support to victory, but the Tea Party also has had a dividing role in the Republican Party, and there's been an effort to try to heal those rifts as Governor Scott's term in office has proceeded. He was just down here in Florida over the weekend trying to rally Tea Party support. What role do you see that political wing playing in the November elections?
Well, I think that the Tea Party called attention initially to what should have been obvious, but no one had called attention to it and called it out, and that is the out-of-control spending and the unsustainable debt. So they started a movement that was important, and I think that most people have a little bit of Tea Party in them, whether they identify themselves as such or not, and that is they want to see government operate at the proper size and the proper role and to get their spending and take care of taxpayer dollars in an appropriate way. I expect that they'll continue to be influential.
Do you think it's critical to have Tea Party support for reelecting Rick Scott?
You know, one thing that I found about the Tea Party is they're not monolithic. They don't, they're independent thinkers. They don't march to the beat of a single Tea Party leader telling them who to go, where to go, who to support. They think individually. They see that this governor has remained committed to small government and to job creation, and I expect that Tea Partiers, independents, Republicans, and Democrats are going to be supportive of this governor when they see what he accomplishes over the next couple of sessions.
I'm talking with Lenny Curry. He's chairman of the Florida Republican Party. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. I'm Mark Simpson. Let us know how you think Republicans will do in November on WMFE's Facebook page and Twitter. Let me ask you a little bit about Stand Your Ground law. Of course, the Trayvon Martin case is raising a lot of questions about that law. Governor Rick Scott has appointed a task force to look into it. And there's a growing effort to try to repeal this law, both in Florida and in other states. Where do you see this movement going?
First, let me say that my prayers, condolences go out to Trayvon's family. Tragic. I have young children of my own. I can't even imagine what they've experienced. In terms of the Stand Your Ground law, I'll leave it up to the policymakers and the task force to review it and come to the appropriate conclusion and decision.
Do you think, though, I mean, this issue not going away, we're already seeing it kind of being raised by Democrats like Chris Smith, wanting to have it repealed in the legislative session. Is this something that Republicans are going to be defending when they meet again in Tallahassee?
Look, I'm a Second Amendment guy. I believe that individuals that are Constitution in the United States allows for people to have firearms. As far as how the state, again, the state handles this issue, I'm just going to let the policymakers, the task force, have this conversation, and they'll come to a conclusion, and they'll have to answer to Floridians, to the voters.
Do you think it's going to come up on the national stage when the Republican National Convention moves into Tampa?
The issues that we should be talking about going to this national election are job creation and economic opportunity. We've been successful in Florida here. Governor Scott has in the Florida legislature in creating jobs, creating a business-friendly environment in spite of the federal government. It would be nice to have a partner in the federal government, but that just doesn't exist. So I expect that that's going to be the issue. That's the issue now, and that's what we're going to be focused on and talking about.
Still, though, you'd acknowledge this has definitely touched a nerve.
You know, this has touched a nerve, but there are many other issues that the Democrats want to talk about. Let's even putting aside this, because this is a tragic case, a young man lost his life. But, you know, the Democrats are trying to get off of the subject, off of the conversation. They want to talk about anything but what actually this president has done, and that is he's incurred almost $5 trillion of debt in less than 4 years, about the same amount President Bush incurred over two terms. So they're just trying to come up with other issues to distract from their failures. And that he didn't, instead of focusing on job creation, he focused on a health care law that is now tied up in the Supreme Court. They don't want to talk about that, so they're going to be looking to change the subject and talk about any other number of issues, and we're going to remain focused on what matters to individual Americans, and that's the economy.
Well, talking about Democrats, of course, one who's got a big target on him in Florida is U.S. Senator Bill Nelson. Congressman Connie Mack has generated a lot of buzz when he announced he's going to challenge Senator Nelson in that race. And of course, Mack has great name recognition, the son of popular U.S. Senator. Of course, he's being the great grandson of a baseball icon. But new numbers showing Mack hasn't raised too much money, maybe not too much more than even George Lemieux. So I wonder, are Republicans still excited about Connie Mack in this U.S. Senate race, or is he starting to kind of flame out a little bit?
Well, let me say that the Republican Party of Florida is not behind any specific Republican in this primary. It's going to be our job, both George Lemieux and Connie Mack and Mike McAllister have people that are invested in them. monetarily, and they're sweating and working for them and care about them. And it's our job to make sure that we can coalesce around whoever the nominee is. So, again, the party is agnostic on this. We need to make sure that we can support and that we do support our nominee and beat Bill Nelson. That's our goal.
Is it an issue, though, seeing that there is still primaries scrabbling going on at this stage in the game?
No, I think we still have time to get through this primary. And once we get into the summer, the primary will be in August. I think that we'll have time to contrast. Senator Nelson is married to the policies of President Obama, and we can begin making that case right now. As we move towards having a nominee, it looks like it's going to be Mitt Romney. We can begin making the case, contrast against what President Obama has done and what our vision for this country, and Senator Nelson's tied directly to the Obama administration. So the party can begin to make that case.
Let me talk to you about another district that's in play. This is a congressional district in Osceola County, 41% Hispanic, and is attracted to strong Hispanic candidates, including Osceola County Commissioner John Quinones, and looks like Alan Grayson, the former Democratic U.S. Congressman, is going to be running in that district as well. What do you think is the favorability for Republicans in that race?
I think every day that Grayson is in the media, on TV, or in the news talking is a good day for Republicans.
I've been speaking with Lenny Curry. He's the chairman of the Florida Republican Party. Lenny, thanks for your time.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Up next, a group of wounded Iraq and Afghanistan veterans learn about fly fishing in Montana.
I came back from combat and found I needed relief. And the more I was out there fly fishing, the more I knew I needed more of it. It became an absolute desperate physical and mental need. And I had to do it or I was going to kill somebody.
That's an excerpt from a new documentary which chronicles the recovery of wounded Iraq and Afghanistan veterans fly fishing in Montana. It's called Not Yet Begun to Fight and is screening this week at the Florida Film Festival. Sabrina Lee is the film's producer and director. She joins me from Bozeman, Montana. I'm also joined by Eric Googe. He's a 23-year-old former Marine who served in Afghanistan. He joins me from Evansville, Indiana. Sabrina Lee, Warriors and Quiet Waters is a nonprofit that brings together wounded soldiers to Montana to learn about fly fishing. How'd you find out about this story and what attracted you to it?
Actually, in the making of my first documentary film, I learned from one of my subjects how his father, who suffered from PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder as a result of the Vietnam War, had walked out on their family when he was a young boy and he had never returned. And it made me acutely aware in a way that I had not been before of how for all of those who are involved in these conflicts, the war is really never over. And it also occurred to me that despite the fact that hundreds of thousands are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, I know little or nothing about them and what their experiences will be going forward. And that kind of troubled me, I guess. I think as a documentary filmmaker, you hope that if something compels you, that it'll also be of interest to other people, to audiences, and that in some way, I guess, becomes the justification for making a film about it. But I felt like despite how much I may read or hear about the conflicts and those returning, I don't really know anything about them, and I wanted to give a face to the war, to the aftermath, and give myself and maybe others something to connect to.
Warriors and Quiet Waters is run by Eric Hastings, who himself is a Vietnam veteran, and he found solace in fly fishing after the war. How did you get in touch with him?
After the seed had been planted, learning about PTSD via my first film, I was with my co-director, and we saw a short promotional film about Warriors in Quiet Waters and just thought this seemed like a really wonderful opportunity to explore this subject of the Warriors returning home. And so we reached out to Eric, and fortunately he was willing to allow us access to the program so that we could go ahead and make a film about it.
You know, you mentioned that a lot of times the conflict never leaves the soldier or the Marine after they've left the area physically, and that is also true for Eric Hastings. In the film, he's very emotionally affected by the soldiers who are going through that program. What kind of person is he?
Eric is an extremely complex person. He's passionate. He's committed. He's determined. He's also very sensitive. He seems very tuned in with not just his own feelings, but what the feelings are of the veterans. He is somebody who has to be helping in some capacity, and I feel like in many ways this program that he's pretty much created is really a perfect fit for him, because all summer long he's busy coordinating the program, finding the right candidates, working with the Balboa Naval Hospital in San Diego to bring the Warriors out here, and then through the course of the year, I guess he's terribly busy fundraising so that he can support the program through the summer.
Eric Gouge, you were in the Marines in Afghanistan, and you were a forward observer there. Talk to me a little bit about what your mission was in Afghanistan.
Well, as you said, I was a forward observer. My battalion was told we were going to deploy around February of 2009 as part of the reinforcements that President Obama wanted to send into Afghanistan. So we deployed May 18th of 2009, and our mission basically was to go into an area that hadn't been secured yet, that the British were having a little bit of trouble with, and try to clamp that down to stop a lot of reinforcement insurgent fighters from infiltrating Afghanistan from Pakistan. My personal mission as a forward observer was to deliver indirect fire to infantry squads that I would patrol with. So if we got in some sort of enemy engagement that we weren't able to maneuver or just had too much going on to be able to effectively engage them, then I would call in artillery or mortars.
And so was this your first deployment to Afghanistan?
This was, yes.
And how long were you with the Marines?
Well, all said and done, I've been with the Marines for 5 years. At that time, I hadn't been with them for 2 years yet.
And so what was the mission where you were wounded, and how did that happen?
Well, it actually starts about 3 days prior. We had been taking enemy fire from a specific location in a cornfield at the same time every day, and we had been getting intel that they were trying to lure us out into this cornfield where they had set up an IED. So instead of doing that, we waited till early morning before the sun had rose, and it was real dark out, and we came to this canal crossing and got kind of bunched up, I suppose. And unfortunately, the fellow behind me, he was an Afghan border patrolman, stepped on a 60-pound ammonia nitrate pressure plate IED, and it killed him. It killed an interpreter that we had with us, another Marine, and wounded myself and another Marine.
And so when that happened, were you airlifted out, or what was the process that eventually ended to you being connected with the Warriors in Quiet Waters program?
Yes. From there, I was medevaced via Black Hawk helicopter by the Air Force Special Forces pararescue jumpers. And I was medevaced to a field hospital in Afghanistan, from there to Germany, and then from Germany to Bethesda Naval Medical Center, and just right outside of Washington, D.C.
In the film, you wear a patch over one eye, so you lost sight in one eye, and I wonder, how has that been affecting you, and how has your recovery process been going?
Yes, I lost my right eye. It's actually, in my opinion, one of the easier physical limitations to get used to, I guess. I didn't lose an arm or a leg, and I didn't have to get used to that, but every day there's no real rehab that I went through to get used to looking out of one eye, but every day when you wake up and you open your eye, I mean, you're going to get used to it slowly but surely every day.
So how did you come to be attracted to this idea of learning how to fly fish?
Well, I'd always loved fishing. I grew up fishing. And I really, you know, had never really thought about fly fishing. I was just sitting in the hospital one day, and a fella came up and asked me if I'd like to go to Montana and fly fish. And I said, of course, who wouldn't want to go to Montana and fly fish? You know, I had no idea what I was doing, but I think I really took to it, and I really love it now.
Tell me about that experience. What do you think you learned, or what were your initial impressions when you got out to Montana and started to learn how to fly fish?
Well, first off, I mean, Montana's gorgeous. So, I mean, talk about first impressions. I mean, Montana's spot on. And I mean, it was kind of rough in the beginning getting the hang of it, but I took to it pretty quick, and it was really relaxing. It really was. There's definitely a certain therapeutic value to the slow and, you know, repetitive nature of fly fishing. Most people, or some people, I'd rather say, may find it boring, but certainly not me and the four other fellows that were with us. I think we all really enjoyed it.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. I'm talking with filmmaker Sabrina Lee, whose film Not Yet Began to Fight is screening this week at the Florida Film Festival. I'm also speaking with Eric Googe, a veteran of the war in Afghanistan who also appears in the film. I'm Mark Simpson. Sabrina, tell me about some of the other soldiers that appear in the film with Eric.
Well, they are diverse characters for sure. There's a part of me going into this that imagined that these are five men who are relatively the same age, they've had relatively the same experience, and that they would be somewhat monochromatic, and that was not the case at all. But just to give you an idea, there was Marine Captain Blake Smith. He's a helicopter pilot. He narrowly escaped death when his helicopter plunged, I think, 900 feet in the dark of night in Afghanistan. And now he's a paraplegic. He suffers not only from the physical pain and limitations that come with that injury, but also the emotional struggle of losing his masculine identity, I think is what he calls it. And his struggle, for him, it's really further complicated by the fact that he survived, but others died in that crash. And so I think that there's a level of emotional complication that he's dealing with. There's also Staff Sergeant Mark Hupp. His injuries are invisible, so to speak, but in addition to suffering from a traumatic brain injury, or TBI, he also has post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. And now that he's no longer living in a combat zone, he admits a hard time dealing with people. He says that it's at one point hard for him to remember that there's a side to humanity that isn't vile and cruel, because he's seen what one human being can do to another willingly, and it's disgusting. And so that is something that he's struggling with on a daily basis, just trying to reacclimate to society after living in a combat zone. He was a bomb technician, which is a pretty intense job, as you can imagine.
That's one of the interesting things I thought about this film, is that you have soldiers who have been trained in combat, but then you have this fly fishing program where it's a catch and release, and there's a connection with the living fish there, and you know, it ends with the release of the fish. And I wonder, what did you see as maybe the duality in that relationship between soldiers who've been trained to kill in many ways?
Yeah, I feel like fly fishing is just brings a beautiful metaphor to the film. The fact that these guys were in fact trained to kill, living in a combat zone, and now they are given the opportunity to hold a live creature in their hands and gently place it back into the water and help it survive. That's got to be, on some level, one would hope, a somewhat restorative experience. The colonel says early on in the film that fly fishing is a series of opportunities for hope. And he said before that he hopes, if this program does nothing else, that it restores their optimism, which I think is a really wonderful idea and something to hold on to. And something I enjoyed watching among the vets who are out is, on one of the fishing expeditions, one of the Marines was very eager to get the fish back in the water because he was so concerned that the fish had been out of the water for longer than 15 seconds and he didn't want the fish to suffer as a result of that. And I felt like what a distance he's traveled from you know, the battlefield in Afghanistan to that peaceful moment on the river and his compassion for this fish.
Sabrina, talk to me a little bit about this. You touched on this a little bit already about how in the film you're dealing with soldiers who are coming to grips with the emotional trauma and physical trauma that they've been through, and how that in some ways is contradictory to the image of being a resolute soldier, and you're getting them to open up and talk about injuries in a way which isn't always how the public sees soldiers.
We felt like in order for this film to reach the widest possible audience, that it needed the subjects in the film to speak honestly and candidly about their experience. And although on one level the film is about five veterans returning from combat, in a larger sense, I think it's really about other themes like loss of identity, starting over, and the remarkable resiliency of the human spirit. And so through the course of them sharing their experiences, I think that they each offer something that we can connect to. So whether you've been involved in the military or not, those are themes that they were able to articulate that allow us to connect ourselves to their experience. And I just was very grateful that they were so willing to speak openly about their experience, because I think it's really important for the public to understand what their experience is, so that can inform what their experience is going forward, and we can have a better understanding of what their experience might be once they're back from combat.
Erica, you just recently left the Marine Corps. You've been out for just about almost 2 weeks, and we're actually talking to you on your first day back at work. What's it like being out of the Marine Corps?
Well, I'll tell you what, I just spent 3 hours cutting the grass, so right now it's not too good, but no, I'm really enjoying it. It's definitely relaxing. I mean, I'll always love the Marine Corps. I really enjoy my time, and I definitely don't regret a thing about it. But it's nice to kind of decompress, so to speak, relax.
And so tell us what you're doing right now.
Right now I just, you know, I have a part-time job with a pool insulation company. I work in the warehouse. My plans are to attend college in the spring semester of 2013 here at the University of Southern Indiana. My hopes are to get a degree in criminal justice if the police department, the local police department, can accommodate my disabilities. That's something I really think I'd enjoy.
Well, Eric Hooch, it's been really a pleasure speaking with you, and thanks for sharing your story with us.
Thank you, Mark.
Sabrina Lee's film is Not Yet Begun to Fight. It's screening at the Florida Film Festival this week. Sabrina, thanks for talking with us about the project.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Mark.
You can find out more about the film by visiting WMFE.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast and find out what's happening in Florida online at the Florida Talks blog. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green is assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.